Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. Another day, another report. Let's talk about foreign policy. We hear a story just really started yesterday that a very famous neocon might get a very important position. Deputy Secretary, the Secretary of State?
Yeah.
Wow. And with Tillerson, you know, this is really important because Tillerson, you know, he's been found guilty that he didn't have international experience, which didn't bother us too much. Maybe we needed people like that. So the big thing on the media was you need people with experience. So they found, who did they find? But Elliot Abrams. And there's no doubt he's had some experience, and we know a little bit about him. But the big question is could he possibly be appointed? And there's lots of things fascinating about him. You know, his close relationships with Trump in the not-too-distant past, and also his positions, which seem like they might even contradict what Trump believes, and also that this appointment to the deputy might be equivalent to being appointed Secretary of State, more so than any other appointment. So this is a big issue, and the people who are unhappy with this have already talking about it. It happens that Senator Rand Paul has started talking about it because he doesn't think that Abrams qualifies for being Secretary of State.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and we would say this is just a rumor, but Abrams is meeting Trump today, and there's speculation that he will, you know, name him as his appointee for the very, very important position. As you pointed out, and actually Peter Van Buren, who we know, wrote a piece, I think it was last week, essentially saying that under Tillerson, who's pretty laid back, the State Department is going to sort of sink into irrelevance. And with Abrams in charge, that will not be the case. But the question is whether he'll be appointed. Or the other trick that might happen is that they may float someone that is so obviously grotesquely neoconservative.
Uh-huh.
When everyone has an uproar, then they'll name someone who's not quite as bad, but almost as bad, and everyone will say, oh, we dodged a bullet. So that's Washington.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what we know about his history and his positions. We don't need to go into that in over detail, but we'll talk a little bit about what he stood for. And then we'll talk a little bit about where he was during the election.
Yeah.
He must have been a super Trump supporter if he's getting this position. What's going on here? But, you know, we heard a lot about Abrams. I remember him mostly because he got into a little bit of trouble. And he didn't believe that the Congress had the right to really have any oversight. And he got into trouble. He actually committed a crime and was convicted of misdemeanors. And it was serious enough they wanted to erase it from the books because he was pardoned. This was in 91, so mm-hmm. George Bush was the president, but they were dealing with the Iran-Contra scandal, and but he wouldn't turn over materials. It wasn't called an outright lie, but he was resisting, and I think that it was a serious thing if you believe that the executive branch has a little bit of responsibility, you know, to the Congress. Unfortunately, it's been shifting. Everything goes to the president, and it was normal, or I guess understandable why he assumed he didn't have to. But his slate is clean. It'll come up. The Democrats will use it. But I don't think that'll be the deciding factor. So I think, you know, what he believes in is the big question, and that's where I think it's the most important thing.
And what did he get into trouble with, Iran-Contra, is that he is so enthusiastic over regime change, over manipulating governments, over changing things around, over U.S. intervention, that he's even willing to commit a crime to keep the U.S. regime change thing going. And this was in the 80s, of course, when the U.S. was supporting a lot of pretty unsavory characters. And John Negroponte, Otto Reich were very involved down there doing some pretty vicious things. And he was all for it, all in there.
Yeah, and of course, we're here now, and it looks like he'll probably be appointed. You know, if there's some resistance, it might end up withdrawing him. I mean, that's always a possibility. But right now, we have to think about, well, how do you get appointed with this? I mean, we know he's a neocon. Nobody does.
Oh, yeah.
And the neocons are ecstatic over this. But Donald Trump, We don't volunteer and say, you know, that Donald Trump is a neocon, but people are suggesting, why does he do things like this? Yeah. And what's his position on this? So, but during the campaign, he was not just not a Trump supporter. He was anti-Trump. Anybody except Trump, you know, it was totally negative on that. And even in the convention, he wanted to stop Trump. Mm-hmm. You'd think maybe that would send a signal that the two can't work together. But lo and behold, it looks like all that past stuff was just fanfare for the audience, and that's the American people, to think that, you know, I stand up against him, but that's not so important now. So if I need this guy with experience, bring him in, because he will give credibility to the administration.
And I think we even have a quote, some words that, just so people don't think you're exaggerating, a quote that Elliot Abrams said during the campaign about Trump and Trump's abilities and possibilities. I don't know if we have it handy, but, you know, he was very... very negative about Trump's possibilities. Here it is, yeah. The party has nominated someone who cannot win and should not be president of the United States. We anticipate a landslide defeat and then a struggle to take the party back from his team and his supporters and win the following presidential election.
All is forgiven, you know, in politics. Well, it sort of fits my theme in politics. There's no difference between the parties, and it seems like the deep state always has an influence. The military-industrial complex has an influence. So what was the statement this week by Trump yesterday? That they were going to have a historic financial investment in the military. So they very much, you know, get along. So here it is. They can change their positions and accept it, and even if it contradicts everything that a lot of people thought Trump was on the other side of this. I mean, we wanted to believe, and of course we liked it when he was challenging NATO. But now the big challenge is what's going to happen with Abrams. What if he controls the foreign policy and deals with and has sort of control the foreign policy dealing with Ukraine? Because it invites the question, what happens to the softening stand that Trump, you know, promoted with Russia? I mean, they're contradictory, and yet this recent meeting they had on this issue, 900 people attended just a couple of days ago, and they were all Europeans. It was a big meeting. They held this annually, and they unanimously came down on the side, don't let those Russians expand into Europe. Mm-hmm. Of course, when did the expansion start of NATO into the borders of Russia?
You know, the thing about someone like Abrams, and we should, again, be careful, because it may not be him, but someone like him. Just the fact that his name is floated says they're looking in a direction that is in the swamp, not drain the swamp. But the thing about Abrams, he has never seen an intervention or an invasion that he didn't support from the U.S. side. You know, and that is clear. And as you say, Trump said some things. I think it was December 1st, he said, we need to stop overthrowing countries, stop telling people how to live in the rest of the world. Well, this guy, Abrams, made his entire career on this. And I can go through a few of them. He actually disagreed with John Bolton on Syria, believe it or not. But that's because Bolton didn't think it was a great idea to overthrow Assad right away. So he was more hardline than John Bolton. He wrote in the Washington Post in 2011 that Syria is a fake republic that is going to go down. He wanted the U.S. to recall its ambassador, which we did. He wanted us to ramp up the pressure. And he wanted President Obama to attack in 2013. He was deeply involved in the failed U.S. coup in Venezuela in 2002. Very much involved in that. He was a senior director of the National Security Council for Democracy, Human Rights, and International Relations. In February 2011, he was urging President Obama to attack Libya. And he said that Gaddafi would meet the same fate as Saddam Hussein, which, as we know, happened. I mean, I won't go on too much further, but he condemned Russian aggression in Ukraine in 2014, writing for the Council on Foreign Relations. He's very, very, very much focused on Iran, however. That's a key thing for him. He wants to overthrow the government there.
You've convinced me. I'd be leery of this guy. But, you know, Trump has come across as being less interventionist, no nation building, so he says. But how do people shift their policies? How could he even think about this? It's because the foreign policy, the excuse for the international intervention is the global war on terrorism. And there's terrorists every place. So he has the excuse to go any place, any time to fight terrorism. And it reminds me a little bit about, you know, what empires used to be. The colonial age is essentially over.
Yeah.
You know, the Europeans have been kicked out of Africa and South America, no colonies anymore. But we have an empire, and you know, at one time Philippines was a colony of ours, and we kept it for 50 years, and then we give them independence, but then we want to have control. So empires are built differently now. And so if they can shift their definition of building, you know, taking over and having changing the government. They can change the government of the country without controlling the whole thing. I think that's what's happening, is that they still have an empire, but it is not involved in nation building itself. That turned out not to work so well. But I don't think for a minute that they're going to back off. And like we've said before on this program, that what they're after is there's a radical element of people who don't like us, and it's philosophically driven. And there's a lot of them, and they're scattered all around. It isn't like there's a command post and they have 10,000 warriors, and you know, that is it. They're all over the place because it's a philosophic thing. And I use the analogy of communism. We didn't defeat communism by going out and saying we got to shoot and kill every communist in the world. And this is more or less what's happened. Scattershot. And this is why this shift away from no nation building, it looks like it's not going to matter, because they want somebody in the State Department that will be much more aggressive and be willing to use the force. And Trump hasn't been bashful with that. Build. We really need a strong military, because they're coming to attack us. And of course, that is part of the military and industrial establishment. One thing that annoyed me when he talked about really spending a lot of money, it's an investment.
Yeah.
That's not my definition in economics about what an investment is. This is a disinvestment. This is taking wealth and capital away from our country and throwing it down the drain and creating more enemies. That's why I think this is so negative, this whole policy, and why we so strongly oppose internationalism and intervention around the world.
You know, you just said something that really struck me, and I hadn't thought of it that way before, but it is interesting. The global war on terror has removed the obligation to feel like you need to do nation building. Now you can just do nation destroying. You can just blow things up, because it's about the global war on terror, not about promoting democracy or other things. So that's pretty...
But then maybe if they blow up too many bridges, they'll be pushing, look at what you did to those bridges. Well, then we'll go rebuild them for them, and some construction company from the United States will go over there,
yeah,
and make some money rebuilding the things that we did, that we destroyed.
But it makes you wonder, everything that Elliot Abrams has endorsed foreign policy-wise has been a disaster. Shouldn't that make someone question his judgment? You know, you should theoretically have decent judgment to be in such a senior position in government.
You know what scares me is when I throw that question out to some people who are conspiratorial, which we are not, they'll say, well, they do it on purpose because they want to work for chaos. Maybe Soros wouldn't care. You know, some of these people like chaos and they want to replace it with something in their mind is much better, but it's only much, much worse. So this is what I worry about, that some people don't care. You remember the neocons would say we need a new Pearl Harbor event,
yeah,
so that we can galvanize the people, that they know who the enemy is. And that's scary type of talk. And and I think galvanizing the people is always important. And right now they have the bully pulpit, you know, the whole thing, global war on terrorism, no nation building, and it's a great danger. If you don't support it, you're unpatriotic. The media 100% supports it. And here we struggle with others on the internet. I mean, there's more than just us out there trying to bring sense to this. And there, unfortunately, we don't get enough alliance with the left, but there are some progressives who would agree with everything we're we're saying here. You know, they don't want the wars, and they're a little bit different. But they're out there, and they're being heard, and I'm convinced that when the people, no matter whether they're on the other side or our side, the people who have to fight and pay for the wars, they don't want this. But once it's driven that there's a Hitler out there, mm-hmm. and you have to destroy him, there's a monster to destroy, and if you don't do it, you don't love America. And we hear this all the time. Yeah. You know, even when Trump, you know, made that statement the other day that, you know, and he said it was rather calmly. He wasn't in a demagogic mood. He says, you know, there are a lot of killers out there, and we've done that too. You yeah. know, something of that sort. Oh, I mean, did you hear anything? I mean, it was, he gives this long interview. It was that one sentence that he would actually suggest that maybe we did some dumb stuff, yeah. you know. And that's why our job is so tough, is overcoming, you know, the war propagandists, because there's a lot of them out there, and they do it in the name of patriotism, and that is tragic.
And, of course, they conflate the American government with the American people. You know, how could he denigrate the America? No, no, it's America. It's the government that's done these things. It's the state.
There, that's the big difference, the people and the government.
But they'll say that Elliot Abrams, he's so different from Trump. There's no way. But when it comes to something like Iran, they are in lockstep. Elliot Abrams agrees with Trump and with Mattis and with Flynn that Iran is the number one sponsor of terrorism, which is absolutely not true. It is completely untrue. Matter of fact, there are allies in Iraq and Syria, as we've said on a number of occasions, and it's the sponsors of terrorism are our allies, Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the other states.
They say this goes on, the debate goes on, and we win the debate. Trump says, oh, you know, maybe that Daniel McAdams, Ron Paul, maybe they have it right. I better be careful. And he removes the name. You know, it just doesn't give me that much reassurance. I mean, he's a known quality, yeah. And maybe he will give up before he makes the appointment, which would be a little bit better. But if he offers the appointment, you know, whether or not he'll be accepted will be another story, because I think there'll be enough neocons on the Democratic side to get him passed, even if you had a handful on the Republican side. But I wanted to talk a little bit about where they stand in the Senate. You know, this is just coming up, and that's in the goes in the Foreign Affairs Committee. Rand is on that committee, and the split there is 11 to 10. Mm. You wonder why it's so close. They split the committee according to the amount, the vote itself, and so they only get 11. They can't stack the deck, and that's sort of one of the Senate rules. So 11 to 10, one person go flip from Republican to Democrat, and he can't pass. He can't pass. So it's an interesting position. But does that mean that if they had to vote tomorrow and it comes out 11-10 not to support, what would happen? They probably won't allow that to vote occur. If they know it's 11-10 and they really want this guy, they just sort of tweak the rules a little bit. Oh, we don't have to go through committee. Remember how many times the stuff that we wanted to talk about, because I was on Foreign Affairs, they wouldn't bring it before our committee, and they'd give us 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. They'd have a resolution on the floor. Well, in this case, the Senate can do the same thing. They'll just take it to the floor, and if they have the votes there, they will get him passed. But it will be very interesting to see what happens. But my guess is that the average person probably is not too much into this. I mean, we know who Elliot Abrams is, and we listen to this, and the pundits. I don't know how the media is going to come down on this, you know, because even if you'd expect the New York Times to give Trump trouble, they don't give war trouble.
No.
Will Washington Post oppose this guy that they think might start a war?
Well, Fred Heidel.
You know, and the friends at Fox, too, you know, aren't exactly peaceniks, you know. So he would get some support in the generals. How many generals are there on the major networks now?
Yeah, yeah.
The experts. And there's a few in the administration. So it looks like the militarism of the previous 12 or 15 or more years is alive and well, and the whole issue of non-interventionism in foreign policy is out there. I believe it's alive and well. It needs a boost, But like you pointed out a minute ago, why would they pick a guy that has failed at everything he did? He can't even lie about it, and people would believe him. Oh, well, where we have a city? Libya, that's great. Iraq, great. Afghanistan, that's great. Ukraine, that's wonderful. And we've remade the Middle East. And look how wonderful the Middle East is. How many people did we kill? A few, to say the least.
Only in government can you go up by failing.
Yeah. So that is the case. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. This, to me, is fascinating. Good politics and good philosophy, but so serious. I mean, this might be one of the most significant appointments going on. And you say, well, he's not even going to be the Secretary of State. But most people concede, even Tillerson concedes, that he's going to be very important. He has the credibility. He's had the experience. But like Daniel points out, his experience is horrible. It should discredit him from the appointment. But nevertheless, it's going to go. And so we may know today, tomorrow, the next day of what they'll do. But it looks like Trump will offer his name up, and then there'll be some more discussion. Then we'll see how the media treats him. But Daniel made the point, well, if they withdraw his name, don't get overly relaxed and feel, oh, now we're going to get the good guy. Probably not. But to me, it's interesting and important. And we here at the Liberty Report will continue to argue the case for non-intervention and peace and trade with people, and not go looking for a fight. Don't look for the monsters to fight. And don't believe that we have the responsibility to be in 120 countries with our CIA and our special forces. That's not very good. And it's not an investment just because we double or triple the size of our military spending. It is a waste. It's a destruction of capital. And that is an economic dangerous thing to do. And the greatest danger, of course, that I think is here at home. The destructions of our liberties here at home, as well as the pending economic crisis that we face because we needlessly spend without any concern, both overseas and here at home. That's what we should be talking about. And it's been a long time since anybody in the campaign or recently has talked seriously about the danger of the debt. Because right now, I don't think the House and the Senate will restrain the administration from spending. It will be argued who gets to spend the money, but it's going to continue. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report, and come back soon.